I'm Colm Flynn. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, tragedy in DC. Crews are working to recover bodies after a deadly crash involving a plane and a military helicopter outside of our nation's capital. We have a report and reaction. High stakes hearing. Director of National Intelligence nominee Tulsi Gabbard faces tough questions ahead of her confirmation vote. Headed home, Hamas frees more Israeli hostages as a weeks-long ceasefire rolls on. And cross promotion, a new barn and a big surprise for one couple in the United Kingdom. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. I'm Colm Flynn, in for Tracy Sable. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump says this is a tragedy that should not have happened, and sadly, there are no survivors. He described the deadly collision last night between an American Airlines jet and an Army helicopter. Over the Potomac River near Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C., all 64 people on the jet feared dead, along with the three soldiers on board the helicopter. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports from near the disaster scene at the moment. Owen, what can you tell us?
Colm, good evening to you. The horrific crash that began appearing on people's social media feeds last night prompted a large search and rescue operation here in the Potomac River behind me. Today, President Trump said the military, NTSB, and FAA are all investigating.
In the icy cold Potomac River, authorities now switching from a rescue operation to a recovery operation.
The water that we're operating in is about 8 feet deep. There is wind. There is pieces of ice out there. So it's just dangerous and hard to work in.
Last night around 9 p.m. local time, an Army helicopter apparently flew into the path of an American Airlines passenger jet as it was landing in D.C. at the end of a flight from Wichita, Kansas. No immediate word on the cause. Officials said flight conditions were clear. Two young figure skaters, two of their parents, and two highly regarded Russian figure skating coaches were among those killed. Another skater took an earlier flight.
It's well known, mom was always too nervous to watch him skate. But his dad was with him.
The CEO of American Airlines expressing his deep sorrow about what happened, calling it a difficult day.
And our efforts now are focused entirely on the needs of our passengers, crew members, partners, first responders, along with their families and loved ones.
President Donald Trump addressed reporters today in the White House briefing room, first asking for a moment of silence and then telling Americans,
"This was a dark and excruciating night in our nation's capital and in our nation's history, and a tragedy of terrible proportions. As one nation, we grieve for every precious soul that has been taken from us so suddenly."
The president said his administration will set the highest possible bar for aviation safety.
We have to have our smartest people. It doesn't matter what they look like, how they speak, who they are. It matters intellect, talent, the word talent. You have to be talented, naturally talented geniuses.
And the president's new defense secretary promised,
"The era of DEI is gone at the Defense Department, and we need the best and brightest, whether it's in our air traffic control, or whether it's in our generals, or whether it's throughout government."
And back in the city where the doomed flight took off from,
"We mourn with all those who have been impacted. This is a terrible tragedy."
Also tonight, Pope Francis sent a telegram to President Trump offering his deepest sympathies to the families and praying for everyone involved in the recovery efforts. Along the Potomac River near the crash site, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Owen, thank you very much for that. Well, church leaders in Wichita, Kansas led a prayer service earlier today. Catholic clergy also went to the site of the deadly crash. And one priest from nearby Arlington, Virginia, was with the families at Reagan Airport until the early hours of this morning. And that priest joins us now. Father Frederick Edlefson, he is the pastor of Our Lady of Lourdes in Arlington, Virginia. Father, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Colm.
Father, can you just tell us, how did you first hear about this tragedy and why did you feel the need to actually go there and be present with the people at the airport?
Well, I found out about it not right away. I was getting ready to turn in. It had been a long day, and I just looked at my text messages just to make sure there's nothing I had to wrap up, and that's when I got all the info. I immediately called a parishioner with a background in law enforcement because I figured he may be able to help me get into the airport to say the things that would make me present, allow me to be present with the families of the grieving. I felt it was really my duty. I felt an impulse. I mean, who called the gifts of the Holy Spirit or guardian angel? But airport is within the boundaries of my parish, and I felt, and we have a lot of travelers from Reagan Airport, airline personnel come to our masses and so on. So I felt I need to be there. And so, thank God for Mr. Joe Mazel, who was our prisoner, Knight of Columbus and so on, who escorted me there. And we got it. So I got into the Admiral's Lounge of American Airlines, and we were able to be present to the not only to the grieving families, but also to the personnel who, when they went to work this morning, they didn't know this was going to hit them. They also need a word of encouragement.
Can you tell us what was the scene like? Because this is the nightmare, a nightmare scenario. When you met the people who were waiting for their loved ones, then getting the news in, trying to find out what was going on. I mean, what was it like when you were there?
Yeah, so I'm going to speak generally without getting into details because I want to respect the privacy. Keep in mind, a tragedy like this is not only provokes grief, but it's a very intimate grief. So that's why I respect the privacy of all those who are still, trying to grasp what happened. That said, it was probably one of the most intense moments and situations I've ever seen in my almost 24 years of priesthood, because usually these happen within families or one or two at a time. But this was multiple families. Several people have lost several loved ones. Everybody's in total shock. They don't know what to say or how to react. And they're waiting for the best news. And I would say probably at around 1 or 1:30, about that, more or less, that's when some law enforcement from Washington, D.C. came in and told the families that no, there are no survivors, going from search and rescue to recovery. And it can take some time also to identify the bodies and the remains of the deceased. So that was a hard hit for those families.
For you, Father, then, when they turned to you in total despair, knowing the reality and the gravity of the situation, and when hope has been lost, knowing that they've lost their loved ones, I mean, what can you say, what do you say to them at that moment?
The backstop here and the presumption is you don't say anything, you're just present. You listen, and you kind of get a feel, you have to get a feel for it. It's hard to explain, but it's more often than not okay to say, can we pray together? And it has to be simple and short. Let's say an Our Father, let's say a Hail Mary. Let them talk, but don't say too much. Now, moving down the road, when the grief starts to mature, it doesn't go away, but it does change in time. Then the right word at the right time can be spoken. But right now, the best thing is to say nothing. Presence is what's important, and reassurance of your presence, but also at the same time, maybe a willingness to pray, maybe give someone a blessing if they ask for it. But to have the church visibly present is absolutely key.
I know it'd be a real test of faith for so many of the people there, but it was just incredible that you were able to be there with them. And I know that you've changed one of the Mass intentions, at least this weekend in Arlington. You're going to offer that Mass for the crash victims and their families. So, I mean, you would encourage us all to just keep praying for these people at this time.
That's absolutely. So, we're going to have our Mass tomorrow, the vigil Mass this upcoming Saturday evening at 5:30 is to be offered for the victims and their families, and also for all the personnel that are involved, that American Airlines personnel, Washington Reagan Airport personnel, first responders, but also a lot of the people working in the background. That includes, the Red Cross was there, and these kind of people that are also, behind the works of consolation.
Okay, Father Frederick, thank you so much for your time and for being with the families last night.
Sure thing. Many blessings.
Elizabeth McCormack, a former Black Hawk pilot, joins us now. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for joining us. I'll start off by asking you the big question that's on everybody's mind is, realistically, how likely is it that these pilots could have simply just not seen this aircraft?
Well, it's extremely likely. It was behind them and above them. So being behind and above, even when air traffic control said, do you have the aircraft? They were looking at the aircraft that had just taken off. If you look at the video, you could see that aircraft in the foreground and the accident happened in the background. So they descended into it. So there's a couple things. One, they only had a crew of three, which is a minimum crew. They ideally should have a crew of four. The pilots can only see from 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock on each side. From that 3 and 9 position back is the crew chiefs in the back. And the crew chiefs have a window, and they open the window and stick their head out the window to see. They only had one crew chief. They could only see one side.
Okay. So this was essentially a blind spot, Elizabeth.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people have been talking about the night vision goggles, whether the pilots were wearing them, whether they weren't. Would that have had any impact on this, do you think? Would it have made any difference?
No, because they would have still been looking forward, and they wouldn't have seen the aircraft above and behind them.
I know that commercial aircraft have to use the TCAS system, collision avoidance system, and people have been asking that question today as well. Well, the airplane obviously had it, but do helicopters have to have this equipment on board as well, which can detect an incoming collision? Can you shed any light on that?
Absolutely. So I'm in a lot of pilot groups, and my female aviators group commented on that they fly the CRG, and they said that the TCAS is turned down and goes into a different mode below 1,000 feet because there's so much ground clutter. So it would not have worked, especially as it was in around 400 feet. It would not have worked. The Black Hawk, according to my knowledge, we usually fly nap of the earth and low all the time. As far as I know, we don't have that technology on board.
Now, I know you were saying, Elizabeth, that this plane aircraft was coming from behind the helicopter, but still, I mean, these are the best of the best, the experience level of these Black Hawk pilots. Would that not be something that is just standard, kind of checking 360 all around, even if it's not there in your vision, that they would have some way, even with a reduced crew on board?
Yeah, I personally call for the Department of Defense to require for a minimum crew of four, two pilots, two crew chiefs. So you on visual flights, so you have that full visibility of that 360. There is no way you're going to have that visibility without that fourth crew member.
And we've mentioned one piece of technology that's in commercial airlines, which avoids this very thing. But can you tell us about maybe some of the other technologies that they have on Black Hawk aircraft and helicopters that might have been able to help with this situation?
Well, the biggest thing is that one of the errors that happened, so one is the crew not having sufficient crew. The second thing that happened is that they were flying too high. So flying along that corridor, they're supposed to be around 200 feet. But at night, whether they were on night vision goggles or not, there's a lot of ground clutter with the lighting and a lot of reflections of the lights on the water. So with that in mind, they could have very easily gotten a little disoriented and maybe, rose up a little higher because they felt like they were too close to the water with that lighting. And so that it was a contributing factor, but not the only factor. And then the third thing would be air traffic control. Air traffic control said, do you have the CRJ? Well, the CRJ was taking off. They probably had going this direction was the CRJ taking off, not the one coming in to land behind them. And what the air traffic control really should have said, and typically does, is do you have the airliner, the CRJ, whatever terminology, do you have it at your 5 o'clock?
Yes.
If they had said 5 o'clock, the crew chief would have stuck his body or hers body out of the aircraft to visually confirm, and the aircraft could have maneuvered. That Black Hawk is maneuverable. The pilots are experienced. They could have gotten out of the way quickly. They can move on a dime. They could have gotten out quickly and been out of the way.
We'll have to wait for the results of the investigation from the NTSB and the FAA and the military. But until then, Elizabeth McCormick, former Black Hawk pilot, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, still to come on EWTN News Nightly, with the stroke of a pen, big changes could be coming to American education. Details on a new executive order from the White House and what it means for school choice. And two major confirmation hearings in Capitol Hill, the questions and doubts posed by lawmakers. Welcome back. Several of President Donald Trump's cabinet nominations appeared for high-stakes confirmation hearings, and none bigger than Tulsi Gabbard, who has been picked to be the country's intelligence chief. But there are a lot of questions and doubts about whether she can be confirmed, even among Republicans. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rozelles reports. Eric.
Well, Colm, right now, the U.S. Army reservist and former Democratic lawmaker doesn't have the votes in the Senate Intelligence Committee. Several Republicans are still not convinced that she has the experience or the judgment for the job to lead 18 intelligence agencies and be in charge of a $100 billion budget. One topic that did take center stage was Edward Snowden, the former NSA contractor charged with leaking more than a million classified documents. Senators questioned and asked her why she would pardon him when she was in Congress.
Do you still think Edward Snowden is brave?
Now, Mr. Vice Chairman, Edward Snowden broke the law. I do not agree with or support with all of the information and intelligence that he released, nor the way in which he did it.
You, for years, until you got chosen by President Trump, have celebrated this guy as brave. You've called for him to be pardoned.
Was Edward Snowden a traitor to the United States of America?
Senator, I will also repeat my answer. He broke the law.
Can't we do better than somebody who doesn't believe in 702? Can't we believe that somebody who can't answer whether Snowden was a traitor five times today?
Questions then turned to Gabbard's controversial 2017 meeting with then-Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad. In a questionnaire released before the hearing, she cast doubt on whether Assad used chemical weapons on his people, but testified,
I have no love for Assad or Gaddafi or any dictator. I just hate al-Qaeda. I hate that we have leaders who cozy up to Islamist extremists, minimizing them to so-called rebels.
What did they talk about?
I asked him tough questions about his own regime's actions, the use of chemical weapons, and the brutal tactics that were being used against his own people.
Questions also surfaced about Section 702, a major spy power of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, a program she once wanted to do away with, now says with reforms in place, it has her support.
Share your position in your own words about how strong or how much it is needed with regard to the continuation of 702 and your support for it.
Thank you, Senator. 702 provides a unique security tool and capability that is essential for our national security.
Gabbard also testified in a closed-door hearing, but it's still unclear whether she won the undecided Republican vote on the panel. The Intelligence Committee wants to have a vote as soon as possible, maybe next week, and she can't afford to lose one Republican. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
President Trump's pick to lead the FBI also appeared before lawmakers today. Kash Patel faced questions from lawmakers over his previous statements about overhauling the agency and his loyalty to the president.
If President Trump were to order you to open an investigation into any of these individuals, let's say Vice President Harris, would you?
Any law enforcement investigation, if I'm confirmed at the FBI, will only be launched on the following qualification: a factual, articulable, legal basis to do so. The president has said publicly that he will allow the FBI to remain independent, and I have said as much as well.
Patel told lawmakers that if he is confirmed, he will not take the FBI backwards. Patel is a former aide to the House Intelligence Committee and an ex-federal prosecutor who served in President Trump's first administration. A new executive order signed by President Trump could be a major win for the school choice movement. The order calls for the Department of Education to give guidance on how to use federal funding to support scholarships for grade school students, and it also orders the Department of Health and Human Services to issue guidance on states using HHS funds for private or faith-based schools. Now, several states are already using public money to fund private schools. However, critics say it comes at the expense of public schools. Joining us now to talk more about the executive order is Ginny Gentles. She's the head of the Education Freedom and Parental Rights Initiative with the Defense of Freedom Institute. Ginny, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, let me get your thoughts on this executive order, and how have parents been responding to this?
Well, I, as a parent, was thrilled to see this executive order, and I joined the majority of parents who do support school choice. School choice polls at overwhelming numbers across all subgroups, across all parties, and parents in particular are interested in expanding educational options, having more opportunities for their children. So when we see something coming from the president, a strong statement that he supports parents in choosing and directing the upbringing and education of their children, we get really excited.
And what do you think will be the biggest impact that this order will have?
What the order will do is shake up the federal government and the billions in federal government and have an opportunity to make them more student-focused. Right now, the federal government funds the system, and that's a failing education system. We had the nation's report card, or NAEP, results come out yesterday, and they showed that the majority of students are not proficient in math and reading. These were students tested at the fourth and eighth grade level. And when I say majority, I mean that 70% of eighth graders cannot read proficiently, and an alarming number of fourth and eighth graders are even below basic. So we've got a failed education system, a broken system, and the federal government needs to stop just pouring more and more billions and billions into the system and magically expecting it to improve. So this order will open up opportunities to redirect that federal funding to families, to students, so that those children can attend the school that will meet their needs and will educate them.
And Ginny, regarding the faith-based schools in particular, will they be able to get funding just as easily as non-faith-based private schools?
Well, the funding won't be going to the schools directly, and as schools shouldn't take funding as a practice directly from the federal government. Funding should flow to the families, to the students, and then that family can choose where to take that funding. That's how that works at the state level. When you see the majority of states that have school choice programs, education freedom programs, the funding's available to the family, and then they take it to school, micro school, and other education providers, and make sure that that's the best fit for their family. So yes, the families, if this is done well, if this is designed well, if these plans, when they come back in 90 days from these various government agencies, are thoughtful, will ensure that families have access to those funds.
Okay, we'll watch and see what happens. Ginny Gentles, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now to the Middle East, where Hamas has released additional hostages in a dramatic display. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu condemned the chaotic scenes and called on mediators to ensure the safety of hostages in future releases. In addition, the Israelis released 5 Thai hostages. They were part of the exchange. Meanwhile, 110 Palestinian prisoners, they were released by Israel. U.S. Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff visited Hostage Square in Israel as the latest exchange took place.
I think it's showing what a wonderful, how joyous the people of Israel are. And all over the world.
The fragile ceasefire has held for more than 10 days and is expected to free a total of 33 Israeli hostages. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, making the grade. Which state is praising Catholic schools and why? Plus, a surprise find in a UK barn leaves more questions than answers. The mystery behind this painting. Lawmakers in the state of Michigan have adopted a resolution praising the work done by Catholic schools. The measure notes that more than 51,000 students are currently attending Catholic grade schools and high schools. One Republican lawmaker says, quote, Catholic schools instill a broad, values-based education, emphasizing the lifelong development of moral, intellectual, and social values in young people, making them responsible citizens of our state and nation. Starting this weekend, more than 1,200 pilgrims from Norway will gather in Rome for a Jubilee pilgrimage. Together, they will walk through the holy doors of the papal basilicas and attend a private audience with the Holy Father.
To come to Rome is always to come to the very heart of the Catholic world.
It is to unite ourselves with the successor of Peter. It is to unite ourselves with the universal church. And I would hope that every pilgrim who comes here to Rome can bring that home, bring that with them, that unity of the church, the unity of our faith, and to see this occasion to visit Rome, to really be strengthened in the faith. The Nordic bishops in their pastoral letter said that this year should be about getting to know our faith more deeply, and therefore, by getting to know it, to be able to hand it on to others. So I'm hoping that this pilgrimage for the Nordic countries, all the pilgrimages this year and the Jubilee year, will be another jolt of energy to the evangelization of the world.
And finally tonight, we know our Lord Jesus Christ was born in a manger, but finding him in a barn surprised one couple in the UK. Well, make that a 10-foot-high painting of Jesus. It is estimated to be 70 years old and described to be in good condition. In the meantime, it has been kept at a church as the couple hopes to collect more information from the people of the town about its history. The wife, who's an art teacher, she says that this has intrigued her, the story. She wants to learn more about it and its origins. Well, that is it for tonight. Thank you for watching. And until next time, remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram. Look for EWTN News Nightly. I'm Colm Flynn. Good night and God bless.